the news. Well, not the news from NPR, actually a guide to making sense of our modern news landscape.
Ever since the inception of the 24-hour news cycle, criticizing it has been sometimes popular as consuming it. So do we really have enough news to fill 24 hours? And where did all the celebrity gossip come from and the demand for it? Do we need to know what celebrities are doing? Sometimes you might feel like you want to turn it off.
Author Alain de Botton says that news has become a new American pastime, and he's published a guide on how to approach it with a more critical eye. It's called The News, a User's Manual. He's also the author of best-selling nonfiction books about philosophy, love, and architecture, and he's the founder of the School of Life. Alain, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Well, at the outset, you write that the news has taken on a role that religion used to have. How authoritatively do people see the news?
Well, you know, think of even the name, The News. It sounds so authoritative. There's often booming voices, kind of sonorous music before the headlines come on. What the news never really tells you is that it's never, of course, the news. It's some news masquerading as the news. It's some news that some guys drinking styrofoam coffee, sitting around, try to fish out some stories to give their listeners a sense of what was going on out there. But it's very partial. And of course, I'm not the first person to say it, but the news regularly walks past some major issues of our day. It doesn't see them. And therefore, we have to take great care as consumers of the news to keep our wits about us, to be aware that the news is always going to have some blind spots, and that we need to put a limited amount of faith in the kind of things we're told. These are basic lessons. We're never taught them. You know, when you go to school, you get taught about literature and art and that kind of stuff. No one ever tells you really systematically how to deal with this thing called the news. And that's a very dangerous ignorance.
It's almost like trying to teach a fish about water. We're so immersed in the news, in our media, that it's hard to step aside from it, isn't it?
Yes, and of course, you know, let's remember that the dream of the news was tremendously ambitious. When news got going in Europe and then the United States in the late 18th and early 19th centuries, the promise was if you inform the citizenry, if you let people have information, then people will be able to make the right decisions, press their legislators to make the right decisions in government, and the world will flourish. That was the kind of dream of news. Well, things have happened a little bit differently to that nowadays. It's almost as though if you want to keep the population down, confused, supine, unable to change the status quo, you've got two options. The first option, very well practiced in North Korea, is to throttle the pipeline of news, to prevent people from getting any news. That way you can keep the population passive. But there's another kind of way of doing this. And this is cleverer, slyer, and arguably this is where we are in the United States now. You give people so much news, you flood them with news, that they can't work out what on earth's going on anymore. I mean, who of your listeners can remember what was on the news last week? No one can. It's a trial to remember what was on the news yesterday. Because there's so much of it and there's confusion. So there's a real difference between what news could be and what it is. The promise of news is beautiful. It's information that can help us to flourish as individuals and as a nation. But the reality of news is compromised in 100 ways. And that's what my book's about. It's a look at what we as consumers need to know and how we can navigate the world of news more successfully.
Well, while we look at the news and we're awash in it, we're also skeptical of it, aren't we? I mean, when we see polls, the only thing that people like less than the media oftentimes is Congress. So why that disjuncture? We pay so much attention to the news, and yet we don't like our media.
Well, I think it's like a guilty feeling that we know that we trust the news so much. And then when somebody asks us, do you trust these guys? You go, oh, no, we don't like them. But look, by all accounts, people put immense faith in the news, and the news makes enormous claims. I mean, think of that famous strapline of the New York Times, all the news that's fit to print. There's never been a more arrogant, hubristic, asinine comment than that. All the news that's fit to print. Really? Are you sure? Have you checked it all out? In 2006, 10 blocks from the offices of the New York Times, there was one of the great financial scandals unfolding, and these guys failed to spot it. You know, so they're telling us all the news is fit to print, but they didn't capture it. So look, there constantly are blind spots in the news. But the news, we entrust it with an enormous power. You know, when we think of ourselves as Americans, you know, we're living in America. What kind of a nation is America? Okay, most people don't have personal experience of America. They know their friends, their neighbors, their colleagues, their neighborhood, right? But this entity called the United States, that's something that the media has created for them. It's telling them how America is doing. Maybe the GDP is up or down. Maybe things seem to be going well or going badly. But these are messages that are emanating from the media. So the news does nothing less than to create our own nation in our imaginations.
Okay.
And that is a momentous power.
But there's a theoretically infinite number of things that I could throw just on a front page on any given day. There's got to be some kind of filter. It can't just map the entire reality. Is it possible to not have blind spots when you're trying to do that?
Right. Well, look, I think the first thing we have to watch out for is why on earth does the news keep reporting exactly the same news as all the other news outlets? And the reason is, well, you'll know if you've ever sat in a newsroom, you'll know exactly why. The people in the newsroom are all watching one another. They're not out there looking at the world. They're out there looking at the other media sources. So people at CNN will be watching what people at the BBC are doing, and people at the BBC are reading the New York Times, and people at the New York Times, listening to NPR, etc. It goes on and on. And, that is why there are these kind of mass delusions. But look, you're absolutely right. You're raising a really big question, which is how on earth should a news outlet decide what is important? Now, my definition of news is that news is information that should help the individual and the nation to flourish. Now, news like that can help you to decide what pieces of information are useful or not. And a lot of what gets in the news, you almost feel like journalists haven't really thought about why it's there. They've just kind of served it up, and they just think it's important.
But it feels like news.
It feels like news. Absolutely. You've said it absolutely right. It feels like news, whereas actually, well, it's questionable that it really is doing anything for anyone. So there's an awful lot of, laziness, sloppy thinking going on. And it wouldn't matter if it wasn't such a powerful thing. You get traffic figures. I mean, here I am as a writer, right? A best-selling book might sell 100,000 copies, right? 200,000 copies if things are going really well. That is a pathetic number compared to what a, modest news website will get, which is, in the millions. And so that's telling us something about how powerful this kind of engine is. It's right in the middle of our civilization, and it affects us more than we dare to imagine. It could do so much good, and yet, well, look, I've just been sitting in an airport watching CNN for an hour, and it's a confusing and dispiriting experience, and these guys are not even the worst. This stuff is trained to slightly drive us crazy and leave us very undernourished. What I'm constantly struck by is we know so much in theory. We know a little bit of so much, and yet we let so little of it have a proper impact on us. It would have astonished our great-grandparents who really did believe in the power of information to make a change. We lazily snack on these, bits of data that are not really doing anything for us.
One specific critique you have is that news, the consensual hallucination that makes up the news we have, focuses on bad things in one way or another, a murder, a disaster, and not enough on stories of hope. Why is that an important change that you'd like to see?
Don't get me wrong. I'm nuanced on this point. I don't think the answer, there are people who go around saying, oh, there should be more cheerful news, right? I don't think it's necessarily the case that, cheerful news is good, because there's lots of very annoying cheerful news, like, grandmother celebrates, her 99th birthday or something, and you read that and, it's as annoying as anything else. So that's not necessarily the answer. So, cheerful news, you've got to be careful, really. My point is, really, that a news story can be, in a way, quite sad and still quite useful, quite interesting, quite helpful. And a news story can be quite good and also quite useful and quite interesting. So the point is more the utility. It's not good, bad. I don't want to divide up the cake, but on the axis of good and bad. And indeed, you know, many so-called bad stories have a very vital role to play. I've got a section in my book where I talk about disaster news, plane crashes, giant car crashes, sudden, you know, deaths at the hands of a tornado, etc., right? People love this sort of stuff. Now, why do they like this sort of stuff? Serious people tend to look down on this kind of news and go, well, you know, that's for stupid people who are not really, you know, focused on the big issues. I'm struck by the way that these this kind of disaster news is really modern society's version of what in the Middle Ages was called a memento mori, a reminder of death, right? And in the Middle Ages, it was seen as absolutely normal that one of the pieces of interior decoration you might have on your desk was a skull. You would put a skull on your desk to remind you that at all times, we're all quite close to death. And the point of this wasn't to depress you. It was to lead you to focus on the things that are really important, because the thought of death has a very vital role to play in kind of separating out the valuable and the non-valuable. And I think there's an echo of that when we are mesmerized by the story of, you know, a young mom who went out to buy a bag of chips and, you know, got mowed down suddenly by a crazy motorist or something. You know, as we're turning that story over in our mind, we're kind of trying to get in touch with some big ideas there. My problem with a lot of the news is that it's undigested. It doesn't offer closure or catharsis. It simply presents this kind of stuff to us. It doesn't tell us what we might do with it. And that's why it often leaves us with a kind of background of anxiety, undigested experience, going nowhere in particular. And that's my problem with it.
We're speaking with author Alain de Botton about how to make sense of today's news landscape. His new book is called The News, A User's Manual.
And we'd like to hear from you on this. Do you think that the news is a vacuous wasteland and it's hard to dig out those kernels of wisdom? And what do you think the news could be doing better to serve up meaning? We're back with author Alain de Botton talking about how to make sense of today's news landscape. His new book is called The News, A User's Manual.
And we'd like to hear from you. Do you think the news has gotten out of hand? Do you have questions about how it works, or are you seeking advice on how to use it in your own life? You can join in at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We'll get your calls in just a couple moments. But Alain, first, you're talking about how ultimately we get undigested bits of news here and there, but not really anything putting them all together. What would you like to see the news, the media, do differently to give us context, to tie those things together, make it relevant and useful to us?
Well, you know, we've just heard your latest bulletin, and your latest bulletin was nonsense because it was just a ragbag of sentences about a whole range of things. And I'm trying to imagine the person who really needed that bulletin in their life. It's like, okay, so President Obama has, you know, supporting the minimum wage, etc., and then on to another story, and on to another story, right? What is this for? Who at NPR made the decision that this was a good idea, right? That there's a kind of fundamental intellectual vacuum. People have not thought properly about how information can become effective in people's minds. And there's this idea that the new is always very important. It's the most important thing you could know. Of any area of human knowledge, the thing that happened in the last half hour is the most important. And that's why we need these constant updates. So the update is more important than any kind of steady state knowledge. Now, that is, of course, true at certain moments of national history, maybe in a war where there is, you know, very key bits of information coming through every 5 minutes. But most of the time, that's just not true. And what the constant update culture does is to break our concentration on the ongoing story. It's as if somebody was giving us a succession of novels, allowing us to read one sentence and then taking it away from us. We wouldn't be, ultimately what it does is it actually makes people bored because they can't grasp what the story is. You need a little bit of time. Now, I've spent some time in studios, and if you talk to, you know, harassed editors and you say to them after, you know, a long, hard day's work, you say to them, guys, why are you doing what you're doing? They will say, we are terrified that listeners are going to switch off. And so therefore, what we try and do is just bombard them with loads of stuff all the time so that we'll try and grab somebody. But that's like a very nervous, gabbling person who isn't able just to have the confidence to speak clearly for a while, maybe for 10 minutes, about something without being interrupted. But instead, there's this kind of congenital nervousness, and it reaches its pitch, of course, with 24-hour news, which changes about every 40 seconds. And most issues in life are not amenable to being treated in 40-second chunks. And so what you end up doing is both hooking the viewer, the audience, because it's very grabby to say, you know, not coming up now, we've got something exciting to tell you. So, you know, you stay and you listen, but you're not properly nourishing the person. And so it's a big problem.
But again, people in the media might say, this is what our viewers, our listeners, our readers want. They tell us they want the up-to-the-minute news. We are just providing the service that they're looking for and that keeps them tuning in.
Look, I mean, that's the McDonald's argument, and I have a lot of time for it. You know, the argument is, don't blame us. We're merely frying up the burgers and making the fries. And, you know, if people are going to come through the doors and buy it, don't blame us. And I absolutely understand it. I suppose my view is, let's try and get a fast food restaurant that's a little bit better. Let's try and pull the customer base towards something a little bit more ambitious. You know, what's amazing is, even though there's so many news outlets, they do tend to follow very, very much the same script. You know, news on the hour, you know, call in, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's all sorts of things. And it's amazing how little diversity there actually is, even though there are so many platforms. Look, I think we're still at the dawn of the age of finding out how we can get the information we really need. I don't think as a society we are properly doing information gathering well. There's a lot of chatter, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of static. Are we really getting to the stories that matter? Are we really getting them to the right people without driving them crazy? Are we placing the right levels of anxiety on people? Are people too anxious or not anxious enough, etc.? You know, I meet a lot of people who say things like, I've stopped listening to the news and my life's a lot better now. I don't think that's the answer, but I can sympathize with what might lead someone to that position. Yeah.
I'm going to bring a caller in now. We've got Bill on the line in Greendale. Bill, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I think your guest is really spot on. I wonder what you think of Facebook. Now, here I'm on Facebook. I don't contribute, I don't post a lot, but my friends and family put on news that affects them. And then I might link on to it and find out more about it. And then I also wanted you to comment on The Daily Show and Colbert Report, just to see what you think about those two shows.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Olin, social media is a way for us to help each other filter our news.
Well, look, I think there's something very interesting. There's news from outside. There's news that NPR might tell us. But there's also another kind of news, which is news from our own lives. Okay. Now, there's different ways of interpreting that. One way is to say that's news about like what my nephew's doing or when my cousin's birthday is. Okay, that's one kind of news. But there's another kind of news, which is literally news from within. What is my life? Where am I trying to get to? What are my ambitions? What are my regrets? Who am I? Right? Now, all of those questions get really squashed by Facebook and by the news and by everything else, by the chatter. It's very hard. It's increasingly hard nowadays to have a conversation with yourself, to get the news out of yourself, because there's this constant barrage of very prestigious distraction out there. And we have to take real care, because even though Facebook looks like, oh, that's about me and it's about personal thing, it's not really, really about you either. It belongs to that vast realm of constant and continual distraction. We need to take new Sabbaths. We need to step out and talk to ourselves. It sounds weird. It sounds mystical. It sounds like something Emerson or Thoreau would say. Good. That's precisely what I mean. It's the log cabin. It's the metaphorical log cabin. We need to go there and put the smartphone on the outside of the log cabin. As for Colbert, etc., these guys are doing great stuff, because they understand that in order to make news powerful, you have to work at it. You have to turn it into a joke or into art in some way. And too often news organizations think, we'll just put the important facts in front of people and then they'll respond. Well, no, you have to do something with it. You have to try and make those facts seem funny, deep, interesting, cogent, etc. So they belong, those humorists belong to people who are doing stuff with the raw material of the news. It doesn't have to be funny stuff always, though that's something that they've mastered, but it's just trying to digest this stuff a little more rather than just presenting it to the audience in a raw form.
All right, we'll take one more call from Marty in Milwaukee. Marty, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, great show. I'm sorry I caught it so late, but I guess I want to share with you Marty's law regarding news content. The law basically is very simple. The likelihood of a story to get to the air, and I'm speaking primarily of commercial broadcasters, is in inverse proportion to the cost of providing that story. In other words, when you have a snowstorm and you can show somebody shoveling the snow in front of their house, it's anticipated, it's predicted, but you'll see it every single time because it's cheap to cover. If you're talking about an investigative report that's going to require time and you don't even know where it's going to lead, you're not going to even see the story. I think it lowers everyone's expectations.
Thanks for the call, Marty. Alan, that's in part related to the laziness you talked about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, look, I sympathize with newsrooms that have got small budgets, and I don't necessarily think the answer is to send everybody out to Africa or far-flung places. You know, what I really think people need to do is think. And thinking is cheap in terms of, you know, pure dollar terms. What you need is a, you know, empty room and a clear head, and you need to think, okay, what are we trying to do with this storm story? What are we trying to do with this budget or Congress story, etc.? And I just think because of the 24-hour news cycle, journalists, and I say poor journalists because they are under immense pressure, they are running like, you know, hamsters in a proverbial cage, and they do not have time to make sense of the information, and therefore they are confusing the entire nation. And it leads to the situation we have now, which is a very well-informed citizenry that knows nothing.
We'll leave it there. Alan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with author Alain de Botton about how to make sense of today's news landscape. His new book is The News, A User's Manual.